A broken blade can be mended.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast bringing you all the updates and reviews you really need on whether all those Book Talk famous books are worth your time, especially in this world where us professional ladies are so damn busy. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. And today we are bringing you a Book Talk baddie. This one was birthed from Book Talk. The forward even thanks Book Talk. This is A Broken Blade by Melissa Blair. And so this is your run-of-the-mill, fae, slightly magic, badass heroine, fantasy that everybody is super into right now, hence Book Talk influence. The main character, Kira, is the blade for this kind of evil king who has banned magic and murdered Faye, and she's his assassin and the leader of all his other assassins. And she kind of gets herself tangled up in some of the politics of the realm. And it's all about a section of the population called the halflings, which are half elf, half human. And she is one of those and has to often reckon with doing some terrible things to that population that she's a part of. Oh, and major trigger warnings for like addiction, self-harm, suicidal ideation. It's pretty graphic.
Colonialism. It's a dark book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you struggle with like self-harm, probably not the book for you. You might stop right here.
Cool. Well, you guys have your reviews.
Yes. And I want to go first because I found this review while researching and I thought it was so funny. It's a 5-star review on Goodreads and it's one sentence and it says, "She can punch me in the face too."
Facts.
You can both punch me in the face anytime.
I can go next. I will just go ahead and let this person say everything we've all been thinking. This is a 4-star review. It's giving Sarah J. Maas Aelin fan fiction. I was entertained and I definitely want to read the next one. It just wasn't original. It felt like it's already been done, but I couldn't stop reading. I still enjoyed it. I just wasn't blown away. And yes, if you have read
Throne of Glass,
Sarah J. Maas, Throne of Glass, you'll feel like this is familiar.
Yeah, that is definitely true. All right. And true Casey fashion, I have two. My first one is a 3-star review and it says, "I feel so neutral about this."
That's the ultimate 3-star review.
Yeah, literally.
Someone understood the assignment. That made me laugh. My other one is a 4-star review. It's a longer review, but I'm only going to read the first part. It says, "I completely forgot I was approved for this book on NetGalley. Shame on me. The blurb sounded like it'd be something I'd quite enjoy. And guess what? I finally didn't get disappointed by a blurb."
Nice.
Hey, we've all been hit by the blurb.
The blurb, yeah, is hard.
The blurb is hard.
All right, well, overall, Goodreads users gave it a 4 out of 5, and Amazon readers, usually higher, gave it a 4.4 out of 5. So we are hitting the marks for the trendy fantasy book right now. What did you guys give it?
I can go first. I gave it 4 stars. I thought it was good. I was satisfied with the main character. I thought the plot was intriguing. I liked that it was kind of a more adult version of Throne of Glass. But I kind of agree. I didn't think it was totally original, which docked at points. I also thought the writing was at times a little repetitive. But again, the concept of like Throne of Glass as an adult series, not a YA series, I still responded to. And I really, really liked the main character.
I think, yeah, the main character is what gives this book a lot of depth. Also, I think Sarah J. Maas has set the bar so high for world building that like she is the fantasy book industry. So it's not surprising that this book definitely takes a lot of Sarah J. Maas's influence. What I thought was interesting was you definitely can tell they pay homage to Book Talk. And like some of the stuff that's included in this book reminds me of things that book talkers have said they've wanted in books, mm-hmm. which I kind of appreciate because like that's like really listening to the fans and saying like, hey,
trope check.
But it's not even just like trope check of like, you know, the tropes that are like what you see read in books all the time. It's tropes that people have asked for and wanted and like actually like say like, this is the kind of stuff I read and I want to read more of, or it's stuff like I wish that this was different. So I definitely think this author knows how to write to the fans.
I agree. I also gave it 4 stars. Obviously, I like this kind of fantasy if you've listened to any of our past episodes. So fine by me. The 5 didn't come because it's like everything else right now. And that's not her fault. Everything post-2020, post-SJM is kind of the same. It was a little slow in a few spots when she's kind of dealing with her emotions, which is like not a bad thing. It just killed my momentum a little in the first book. And my major thing was I didn't totally, for most of the book, maybe all of it, understand the difference between elves, fae, halflings, other things that come into play. And I was like, 1 + 1 does not equal 3 here. I was a little confused.
Yeah,
I will say it's a spoiler to a question we're going to ask in a minute, but I'm halfway through the second book and it makes a little more sense now. I just wish there would have been a little more explanation of the first, because that really harshed my understanding of the system.
Yeah, when you build a whole new world and with a very bunch of different varieties of characters / races, you have to explain them. And I feel like for how short the book is, it's hard to really delve into that history and what's the difference between each. I think she does a good job series wise, because I've also read the second book. It gets very much more explained in the second book because she has that character building already done. So now she can build out the world a lot more. So yeah, I think that is something to knock the book for in this first one. But I think it's interesting that this is the first time that we are exactly at the Goodreads review rating level, each one of us, which is a 4.
Yeah. Well,
usually Catherine and I are more easily pleased with this kind of fantasy and just go, okay, 5. It's just mostly because I didn't understand the world hierarchy she was trying. Like, it relies so heavily on the hierarchy of where people stand in the world that it wasn't explained well enough for me.
Yeah. The whole time, I just wanted there to be like a species definition chart.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. And then like maybe a, like, you know, a hierarchy under the king's rule chart, because I was also getting really, really confused, especially because it was like a lot of species that are really similar, like human, fae, elves, and there were like different kind of fae and different kind of elves. And I didn't understand the way the king's immortal, but mortal. And I was just, there were a lot of like words being thrown around that I never really fully understood.
Well, yeah. I know the point is it's the Halfling Saga. That's the name of the series. So like the point is halflings are being persecuted, and that's the point. I just like
major thing.
Don't understand what they're half of always.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously everything's always mixy. And like one of the princes is mixed. And I was like, is that not an issue? I was just
right, like, well, mortal plus fae makes this, but mortal plus elf makes this. But
so
fae
from plus
elf makes something else.
From my understanding, anything mixed with elf is the problem. So they don't like elves. That's why you never see an elf, because they've been massacred.
What is happening?
Yeah, the fae part is a little confusing because they're not persecuted or massacred. They're just treated warily.
But they were. Anyway. They were.
Yeah.
It's complicated. I also do want to say I did want to read the sequel, but I had it on hold in Sacramento and then moved to Washington, D.C. So I will not be picking that up soon, but I really did want to. So I think that says something when we all are interested in the sequel.
Yeah, so we can like skip that question because we all liked it and are going to, well, I guess Does the author have anything else? Because we all either have or are planning to read the second book.
This was her debut novel.
That's what I thought. And the next one, book three, comes out in 2024. So she's moving quickly, like one a year. So we love that. Thank you. That's the book talk. People are asking for that.
Yeah, it's even made it into Barnes & Noble. They made special editions just for this book.
Also, did you read the physical copies? Because that paperback, I don't know what they did to it. It felt so nice in my hand. That is a chonky little, it like lays flat. Oh, as a quality paperback book.
Yeah, it's like, because the cover itself has like, it's a different makeup than a normal cover. And so it like always, you don't have to like fold it over. It stays flat. It stays nice and not crinkled.
It's nice to hold.
It's so, very nice to hold.
If you're looking for a nice book to hold. 5 stars.
Let's add a new reading. How nice is the book to fold?
Table zero.
Does it hold you back?
Fiery, hard zero, -10.
Yeah, I think I actually say this in the episode, but Fiery would be a better murder weapon than a book to hold. So
as a paperback, it's not. It's terrible. Anyway, was the book more plot or character driven, to circle back to the beginning of our usual questions?
I think more plot. I do see a point for character driven because Kira has some realizations that spur her to certain decisions. But I think in general, there's a lot of like plotting going on. So I feel like it's stronger for plot.
Yeah.
I think I agree. I feel like there's a good portion of the book where if you separate it into sections, there are sections of the book that are very character driven because she's dealing with depression and a lot of deep, dark things. But overall, I'd say it's plot driven because she keeps moving.
Yeah, it's definitely the first book is more character driven than the second book. The second book is strictly plot driven. The first book, there are moments where I, like y'all said, I could argue character driven because a lot of the plot only happens because of her. But then there are parts where it's happening to her. So like if she didn't make certain decisions or make certain changes in her life, nothing was going to happen. But then she's also going through some politics that are happening to her without spoiling it.
Well, like she's the king's assassin. She has to do what the king says.
Yeah.
The end.
Okay. So what about the pacing?
I mentioned there were a couple slow spots, and it's kind of the character-driven portions I just mentioned, but overall, I thought the pacing was great for... It went way faster than I kind of thought it would when I was reading it, and no complaints.
Yeah, I agree. There are a few parts where she was just sort of sitting on roofs and watching people that I was like, all right, I get it. But in general, I did think it was a well-paced book. It didn't take me very long to finish at all. So I think like 2 days tops.
Yeah, I think I picked it up and then set it back down. So like in total, according to Goodreads, it was 10 days. But I think really looking back on it, it was like 2 to 3. I just set it down for an extended period of time after the first like 50 pages.
I think I read it in like 2 days too. Oh no, I remember. I blocked this out of my mind because I'm stupid and I needed to block it out. I had read like 10 pages and my physical hold was lapsing and I wasn't going to be able to get on ebook for like 11 weeks, it said, from the library. And so I got the audiobook and I started listening to it. And I think I listened to like 4 chapters on the audiobook. And I was like, can't do it because I'm not an audiobook girly. So that night before it was due, I stayed up and read it until 2 a.m. I think I did it in like a day, basically. Oops. But it was easy enough to read the whole thing in like an evening, late night.
So you heard it here first. It's a great library book to read the night before it's due.
Hey, I don't accrue library fines, okay?
Fair enough.
I'm a good library patron.
I'm a terrible library patron, but I respect that. Okay, so would you watch a movie or TV show of the book?
I feel like it could be an interesting TV show. It's just like the world is so complex that a movie might be a little hard to like get into 2 hours. But a mini series could be interesting. I would really have to depend on who is the creator, executive producer, director of it. Like a lot of this book is directly because of Melissa Blair's experience as a native Canadian. So you would have to make sure there's a diverse cast of people behind the scenes and in front of the camera in order to make it good.
When she says Native Canadian, like an Indigenous person.
Yes, she is part of a tribe.
An Indigenous person, not just like, hey, you know?
sorry. Wow, we're going to offend Canadians here. Cool. Keep going.
It gives me like Green Arrow vibes. It's a DC show, or was it Marvel? Sorry, I think it's DC. My dad watched it a bunch and I'd see him watch it, and it gives major, like, I could see it being like a CW kind of superhero show if it's done correctly.
I do think the themes of colonialism in the book are good, and I think those would be interesting to watch because, like Catherine said, this is like very inspired by things the author like feels and has witnessed that have been done to Native American and Native people at large. I think though that other than that, I don't think it has a lot of commentary that's super unique. So I honestly don't know that it needs to be a movie or TV show. There's just so much like dystopian and fantasy media already existing that I just don't. Like, I'd probably watch it because I enjoy the series, but I don't think, it's not a book that I'm like, oh, this would be so great as a movie or TV show.
That's fair.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not like dying to see it on TV. It just, I don't know, it's hitting everywhere else right now. So
I feel like I just need an excuse to like go to the movies or something.
you're
stuck on Saturday.
That's all we needed.
All right. Busy girl rating. What are y'all going to give it?
I think I'll give it a 5. It's a very quick read. And I honestly think I'll give it a 5 if, with the caveat, if you like fantasy, you'll like this book.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm going to give it a 5 for all the fantasy girlies. Even if you're not super into fantasy, this wouldn't be a bad like gateway fantasy read, I guess. It moves fast enough and I like the character enough. But yeah, if you're reading SJM and like things, this is definitely a 5-star busy girl read.
I completely agree. I think 5 for fantasy girlies. If I was going to say the gen pop, I'd probably say 4. I think if you don't like fantasy, you're not going to like it because it's a very trope-filled fantasy book. But if you like fantasy, it's good.
If you like fantasy in 2023, this is for you. Literally.
And you're having some SJM fourth wing hangover.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if it'll scratch the fourth wing itch, but...
Okay. Well, I think we're on to our spoiler alert section, so... If you've been listening so far and haven't read the book, here's your time to stop, read the book, and then come back and listen to our discussion. Or if you want to spoil it for yourself, that's up to you, but don't get mad at us for that.
And remember, major trigger warning on this one, for mental health sorts of things. So you may want to stop here for that reason. Up to you.
Okay. So this is our first, or maybe our first, book talk author. It's her debut novel. What did you think of this book as a first book or debut novel for this author, Melissa Blair? And what do you think about it coming directly from a book talker?
So this is not personally my first I've picked up because someone got, you know, tired of waiting for the new popular fantasy books to come out and went from book talk to author. And this went way better than the other, I think, 2 that I've read that did that. I like this way more. it's clearly more popular than those. I've never seen those really pop up. And I think she did a great job for being her first time. She writes some really, really raw stuff that you can tell is very personal, but she writes it into the fantasy genre, which is awesome for a debut novel.
I agree with that. I don't know. I'm like, what defines a book talk author? Because I feel like Trial of the Sun Queen was also a very book talk author.
I was wondering if that counted too, because I feel like she wrote that purely based off book talk.
Yeah. I said maybe one of our first book talk authors, because it's like, this is the first one that's been like blatantly like in the dedication to book talk.
Yeah.
And also, and I don't know if y'all know this, but she originally published as an anonymous author. So it was published under anonymous, but she left little clues to see who she was. So there was this whole sleuth investigation in the book talk community in 2021 to figure out who this author was.
Book talk.
Yeah, it was kind of funny when I was reading about it. I was like, I didn't see this at all, but like, this is super cool. Like, it's Taylor Swift-esque vibes. And then she finally published with her name on the cover. And obviously has a deal with Barnes and Noble to make exclusive editions and stuff like that. So she's become pretty famous. But she reviews indigenous peoples and LGBTQ books on Book Talk. That's where she kind of started getting into this Book Talk scene, is like, and she noticed that these tropes and like the stories of indigenous communities weren't fully being told. So she kind of was like, what if I meld all of these together to create this book kind of thing? So like we talked about earlier about like tropes and like adding all the things that Book Talk wants to see. So she's taking from her own experience as well as what she saw that Book Talk wanted.
The other one I know I've read that's kind of Book Talk influenced was called A Dawn of Onyx, which is like a good little book. Also, does Carissa Broadbent count? Because I feel like she's sort of on that train. If you're reading Serpent, the Wings and Night, I feel like that's kind of heavily influenced by just popular social media books.
But that was more influenced by SJM, I think.
Popular social media books.
Yeah, but like, is that officially like book talk?
I don't know. That's what I'm wondering, how we define this, because I feel like there's a few I've read that fit, but if we're really strict on the definition, maybe it's just like one.
I don't know how to define it.
The authors are all playing to our likes right now, so.
Yeah, I thought it was circling back to the question, outside of the book talk stuff, I thought it was a good first novel. I think I would try her books again. I would definitely hope in the future to see a little more like ingenuity. To me, I think the reason that I didn't, a lot of the bad reviews I saw were saying that the book is too tropey and the book's not original. I can understand that perspective. I personally have not read a depiction of alcoholism in a fantasy book, and that was something I really appreciated. And that to me was like enough newness to keep me hooked. And I would like to see her like continue to sort of grow.
I agree. The alcoholism and the coping through self-harm, I feel like it's sometimes too real and raw for a fantasy author to tackle. So like are common things people deal with. So I appreciated that dive in, and I think that made it unique. And I think the tropes and things are excusable because of that, and because at the beginning she literally dedicates the book to book talk. So
yeah,
like it's excusable and it's giving me the candy I want, you know?
Yeah. And she's not like disrespecting alcoholism at all. It's like very raw and real portrayals. It's not like making it to make money or anything like that, or like just needlessly adding trauma to a story to further a plot line.
And places trigger warnings at the beginning, letting you know it's coming. So like very respectful of all of it.
Yes. Well, so I kind of wanted to talk more about Melissa Blair, because I also mentioned that she is a Indigenous person. Native Canadian, lives on Turtle Island, which I had never heard of. And she is a part of two tribes. So it's the Anishinaabe and Kwe. I hope I said that right. I'm not very great at pronunciation, but
I'm glad you took that one.
Yes.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not saying it.
Yes. But it was very cool learning about her history. It's kind of one of the first authors I've like really delved into a person's history, because she's got a really cool story. So she lives in Ottawa most of the time, but then lives also on Turtle Island. But she talks about in her author interview on Goodreads, she said, "A broken blade came to me sitting on my couch wondering what I would write with these tropes and in this genre. Everything in this book is informed by my perspective as an Indigenous person with knowledge of how colonialism has and continues to impact Turtle Island. The themes of colonialism and indigeneity." Oh gosh, why is my
being indigeneity? Yeah,
indigeneity. Sure. Indigeneity. Sorry, like I said, my pronunciation sucks on most words. I explore in the first book will only continue to develop through the Halfling series. So that's kind of what she has said, and what we've talked about so far. So, what did you think of that incorporation of colonialism and talking through it with the perspective of like fake or mythological slash fantasy characters and races like the elves, the fae, the mortals, and the halflings? And do you think this book does a good job of talking about colonialism and its impacts?
I mean, it's close enough to what happened to the native people across North America that it's uncomfy. So like, she did the job. Like, they see these halfling people as a threat and go about eradicating and persecuting them and pushing them to small communities. They have to protect each other. I mean, read about the settling of America. It's the same story.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree. It definitely,
even the stuff with like the very deliberate like language around race and like species in the book, and how it was very important to like parse these very specific things, and like it wasn't all about appearance, you know, like knowing anyone had like, quote, this is like a direct quote from the book, like a drop of a certain type of blood was enough to make them, another quote, dirty. And I think that all is like very similar to how Indigenous peoples have been viewed for a long time, and how like wider colonialism has thought about Indigenous people. So all of that felt very on the nose, which I thought was good.
Yeah, it's even on the nose of the, like, the elves are completely eradicated, and then the halflings are put into servitude, who are half mortal, half elf. And I think it was really interesting to see how the old ways and like the elves and the fae really respected nature, was a part of nature, had this magic almost in their religion. And then the mortals come in and it's very like industry focused and farming and crops and building things. And it's very Industrial Revolution-esque, and but it doesn't have that respect of nature.
Yeah, I'll also draw a comparison to a lot of the halflings are recognized purely by their ear shape, the point of their ear. And there's been, I have ended up on the Indigenous creator side of TikTok. So there's like this movement to sort of normalize and bring back Indigenous tattoos and markings and that kind of thing for those Native people. And so I think people, you know, were persecuted for that kind of thing. Their Indigenous markings, tattoos, and the history they told on their skin, which talks about in this book also, like telling history through tattoos and scars and things, which, you know, the easiest picture is like the Samoan people, Polynesian people, that kind of thing. But like, that was a thing in Canada, the Inuit people too, that kind of thing. And so if you dig into like Indigenous creator side of TikTok, there's some really interesting things, people trying to bring some of these things that used to make them stand out for a bad reason back for a good reason. And I think the book sort of starts that conversation.
That's super cool. And it kind of brings up a discussion about tattoos and, unfortunately, self-harm in this case. The main character, Kira, she engraves the names of those she kills, and it's like a remorse kind of thing, or regret, or like forever remembering them, into a almost tattoo-like like formation on,
like emulating elven battle tattoos.
Yes, she's emulating elven battle tattoos, which Sira, a side character, has. What did y'all think of this portrayal of self-harm? Because that is self-mutilation. And also, like, how she uses it because it's from her guilt of having to be this assassin.
It is. You know, it was painful to read about and uncomfortable to read about, but, like, you understood. And I didn't think too deep, like, past that until I read a review that talked about someone DNFing the book despite liking it because of how it replicated, like, self-harm and cutting to cope. And she was cutting names into her to cope with what she had to do. And that kind of spun it just a little bit more I needed to fully understand what was happening, and made it even more sinister and harder to digest for me. But it was, like, also kind of a really important character building description for her, and, like, how she's dealing with these things she has to do for the king. I don't know. It made me feel, I think, how she intended for you to feel reading it.
Yeah, I mean, you feel really sad. And I think part of how you know it's self-harm is that she feels ashamed of them, even though she did them to sort of, like, honor the dead, and also as a little bit of, like, self-mutilation, like a small bit of sacrifice. She does not want other people to see them. You know, it's not like something that she bears is, like, you know, battle scars, like, look at all the people I've killed. It's like a very private experience for her. And I thought that was really nuanced. And so parts of it were hard to read, but I also appreciated how it contributed to her character.
Yeah.
Especially because I don't think you can write someone who's struggled with alcoholism and then just be like, and that's their one thing.
Yeah, like, I get where that reviewer you mentioned, Caitlin, said, especially if you've dealt with self-harm in the past, like, it can be really triggering to see an author write about self-harm in this way. But I don't think at all it was any sort of saying, like, self-harm is good or, like, anything.
Yeah, no,
like
that. It was this person stopped reading because they have a past experience with self-harm. Sorry if I didn't clarify.
No, that. You're good. I just want to, like, clarify further of just,
yeah,
it. I think it's so interesting when authors really write in these experiences, because you don't see them a lot in literature. Like, you see kind of like, oh, I'm going through trauma, I lost my best friend, or I'm going through grief or depression, but you don't see, like, how people use unhealthy coping mechanisms to get through traumatic experiences. And I think the more you shine light on them, the more you allow for a conversation about them, like we're doing here. And I think while it's not a good thing what she's doing, I think it's her way of reclaiming her own body almost, and her bodily autonomy, in a very fucked up way. But it's to forever remember the stuff that she did, to remember the people that her own blood, other halflings, to remember them and to say, like, your life was important. It mattered.
One, like, made all the more serious by, she's not someone who lives 70, 80 years and dies. Like, this is a forever testament she's carrying with her for millennia, because she is a long-lived, fantastical person. So, like, it adds even more depth that, like, these are quite literally with her forever, in the sense that, like, a human being could not understand, I guess.
Yeah, because in this book, she's, like, 30s or 40s, right?
No, she's, like, 60s.
Never mind.
I cannot believe this didn't come up. Finally, a real adult female MC. Oh, my God. I cannot believe I didn't mention this in the prose and, like, the non-spoiler section. The fact that we finally have a main character who's, like, out here dating ancient men, who is, like, an actual full-ass grown woman. I'm like, thank
and
God.
And may or may not be older than...
I think she is older than the main character, than the main male love interest.
what's his name? Riven?
Riven, yeah. Yeah.
He's like the last Fae born and she's like 60, 70 years old.
And I think she remembers when the last Fae was born.
Something like that.
Because she knew his mother or knew of her.
Of her. I don't know. She's not thousands of years younger than him or whatever. It's like.
No, she's gone through life.
That's creepy. Not that I minded in the other books, but.
Yeah, I was still on for the
Yeah, I completely forgot about it. I read this full disclaimer like 2 months ago and then told them to read it. So that's the reason why it's on this podcast. So I forgot that she's like 60.
She thinks she's 60. They found her when she was like 8 years old or whatever. They don't really know.
But she is.
She has
for human standards old
years of her memory. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so now let's get to the world building. We've mentioned a little bit that some of the distinction between the elves and the fae and the mortals and the immortals was a little confusing. In general, what did you think of the world of Elvrath and the history that was the context of the story?
Okay, first of all, you already know I thought a lot of that was confusing. Mm-hmm. Aside from that, when they crossed into the Fae lands and went to the city in the tree, I was like, that's where I was like, I would love to see someone try and bring this to life. Because in my head, it was just like the most beautiful, awesome setting ever, in contrast to like the dark human lands and stuff.
I'm sorry, Night Court vibes, like, or Velaris vibes, like hidden.
I was thinking city. Spring Court.
I don't know. It was giving me like Lord of the Rings, like Rivendell vibes, you know.
I just mean in the sense of like a city that exists, but they're kind of keeping it quiet. And it's like, right. It has this reputation of being scary and dangerous, but it's actually just so beautiful.
But like the fact that they live in the plants, with the plants, communicate mm-hmm. with the plants, how they have these secret passageways when they know how to treat the forests correctly, that kind of thing. Like, it was all so magical. And I feel like fantasy lately, it's very like, they live in a castle or a house, you know? Like, no, they lived in a friggin' tree. They were people of nature and they were like sprightly. It was super cute and I wanted to like walk in the land.
Yeah, that was really the only setting in the book that really delved into like descriptors. And I really felt like I could see the place really, really clearly. Like, I love that the trees were spying on her and like the vines were a method of overhearing conversations and knowing where people are. Like, that's just so cool and unique way of thinking of that. The other place that I was really interested in was where she trained. On that rock where you have to jump across like a very dangerous area that's disconnected from the castle. I think it was described well enough for the short time you were there, but it made me want to learn more about that place. I'm forgetting the name of it for some reason, but
it was the Order, but it had like a name for the island
Island itself. And like, apparently it had like very unique history to elves as well. So like it was traditionally used in a different way until it was conquered by the mortal king that's now used.
Is it giving you Parapet vibes?
A little bit of Parapet vibes.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. A little Mount Rushmore vibes, which is fun.
What?
I don't know where you're going with that one.
Like taking a native landmark and making it your own.
Oh. Blasting the faces of your white kings onto it.
Yeah, taking it to then make 20-year-olds fight for you as assassins. Like, I was definitely uncomfortable with it, especially as Sarah was saying, like, oh yeah, that place we used to have rituals there, we used to pray to the gods there, and now it's being defiled so that our kids can be your assassins. So that's
the one setting that sort of scratches the fourth wing itch, though. It's very Basgiath War College. I probably just butchered that. But, you know, it's like the Dragon Riders Quadrant, these badass ladies that no one else can go over there and they're training. And I mean, darker a little bit, but there were elements of everything, like we've said, that people want. Also, I'm going to say something off the cuff here. Does anyone remember the Mario Kart course that's like in the fall tree?
Oh my god.
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. That's like half of
with
what's
the
been in my
caterpillar,
mind.
right?
Oh my god.
Especially in the second book, because they describe a different place that's also on the other side. I'm like,
Oh
am
my
I
god.
in Mario Kart?
Oh my god. Yes.
Okay, sorry. I probably just ruined
Hate
that
y'all
for
for
you. Now you're
this.
gonna picture Mario Kart, but
That is not at
not
all
for
what
the
I
first one, but
picture.
for the second book, yes.
Yeah.
150%.
But now
You
I
know what
like
they
can't
do picture,
unsee
though?
little Mario Kart people, little Toad people walking around.
This is maybe almost worse, but this is what I was picturing. There is some old children's movie, so old that I haven't seen it in like probably over a decade. And it's not a big one, but it's probably one of those ones that was made in the 90s. So, like, some of us have seen it, some of us haven't, like people our age. But ants were living in this giant tree.
Oh my God.
You all know what I'm
Bug
talking
Life?
about.
What are you talking about?
Not Bug's Life, not Bug's Life. It's like
Wait.
the setting is a giant tree.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's like some like hidden forbidden memory in my brain, but I can see it in my
Like
head.
Arthur and the Invisibles? Do
I
they
mean,
live in a
maybe.
tree? I don't know. If you want a more realistic depiction, Tree of Life and Animal Kingdom, I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, there's an animation of this giant ass tree, and it's what I pictured the whole time, like for the big tree.
Basically, read the book and don't listen to what we're tainting your minds with because.
It's all tainted. It's forbidden imagery.
Sorry.
It's cursed
It's so
imagery.
unique that we've had to piece together these really obscure references in our minds to picture it. So, like, loved that specific setting. Despite how confused I was about who's supposed to live there.
Yeah, this book, you needed like an atlas to explain this.
Had a map, which actually I did reference because you needed to a little bit, but that's not the same.
Yeah, I need like a
Yes.
glossary.
Appreciated the map. Last thing I'll say is I did wish we got a little more of the lore in the history behind the elf races that were wiped out. And also you get a little bit of it. I forget her name, but the fae woman who is on the crew.
Sarah.
She's an elf.
Elf.
See, that's the other thing.
Elf.
I can't keep
Yeah.
track of who's a frigging fae and who's an elf.
I can't. It's too complicated for me.
Also,
Anyway.
the word elf just hits different for me than fae, and I feel silly saying it. Anyway. Side
Anyway, I just wish we got a little more of the lore and the history. I think it would have been interesting and like beefed out the story a little bit and would have helped a little bit understand the distinctions between everyone because you just don't know that much about them.
So I'm about halfway through the second book. I just got to what you're asking for. It takes a while to get there.
Yes, but questions are answered in the second book.
I'm still not sure I've got all the way to all of them being answered, but we're starting. Like
You're
I'm
getting
starting
there.
to actually
Oh,
understand now the differences.
the ending pieces a lot of it together.
I just wish they'd done some of the history telling in the first book,
For sure.
like Casey said.
100%. And part of that history is this immortal but mortal King Aemon. He basically is just this long-living mortal that everyone's just like, well, I guess he just lives forever. And I was like, but why?
Yes, thank you.
But why does he live forever? And then he has two sons.
Who also
One's
live forever.
well, okay, but one of them is half fae, so that's more reasonable that he
But
can
they
live
say
forever.
when a fae mates with a human, it makes like a human. I don't know. See, this is where it got really in the mud for me, is especially where Prince Killian comes into play. I was like, this makes no sense.
And then Prince Daemon is this like perverted man who
Psychopath,
psychopath
torture,
who
what
tortures
ever, like terrible,
a
terrible torture.
terrible human. But it's just like, what? Like they have this like immortality, but mortality, but they're better because they're mortal. I don't know. What did y'all think of them?
I did not like the stuff with the king because I did not get it. The whole book, I was like, am I supposed to get it? And I'm not getting it. Like,
I just really felt like I needed
a little more about that information. Because I was even like, how are citizens understanding this? Like, he's mortal, but he lives forever. Like, I just don't understand it.
They just let it happen.
The lie was that, like, because he, like, quote unquote, again, cleansed the earth of the elves, he got the gift of immortality. But I was like, okay. I did think the sun stuff was also confusing, but less confusing. For me, I was really like, what is up with the king?
Yeah, I will say that is all answered by the end of the second book, but you do have to get there to do that. So it would be nice to answer those questions in the first book.
Also, the king, whatever you hear about him being bad, Damien, you get the like visuals of the things he's done. Mm-hmm. And they're almost too dark for me to even want to read. He's like that bad. And I hate every time he like speaks and touches her and spills wine on her, and it's disgusting. So good writing, because I was disgusted, but also ew.
Yeah, like every time he touched her, like I've physically felt ill. Like I just felt like ugh, like I shivered.
Like, yeah, he kept me in his room for like 2 weeks. I'm like, what the actual hell? This is ugh.
And then like he's so proud of the scars he gave her permanently. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, oh my God, like this guy is diabolical.
I also want to say I love a complicated villain. And the villains in this story were pretty one-dimensional. There's the king who like literally led a genocide, so not a good guy. And then there's the king who's, or the prince, who's obviously a horrible person. And then there's Prince Killian, who you can see from a mile away is going to be a good guy. And I was just like, okay, yeah. I could have gone for a little bit like more veiling of the intention.
A little Prince Dorian vibes.
Yeah. Yep. That's exactly what you reminded me of.
And you like knew he was, that's another Throne of Glass reference for those of you who have not read it. But you like get the hints that he's not a bad guy, but then you get to the end and he's maybe a bad guy. And you're like, so you're right. He's the only like not one dimensional ruler guy, but also maybe he's not even one dimensional because he's hardly present and doesn't really do anything.
Yeah. But you see from the hints are very obvious that like he's not totally on board with the king, or he doesn't like his brother, that's for sure. It's definitely, he's more gray, but also at the same time, I feel like he's not that morally gray. We'll see.
His allegiances are questionable in the book. That's about all you get from him.
Yeah.
I did guess the whole time that he was trying to overthrow his father and was working with the resistance.
Same.
Am I for sure confident that he will stay on the good guy side? No. I know you guys know more about I know you guys know more about that than I do, but as far as this book goes, I was kind of like,
he was predictable. But,
to be honest, no. After that like almost Serpent in the Wings of Night as cliffhanger, I'm still a little slow to trust halfway through the second.
Yeah.
I don't know what these authors are going to do to me, because they're all usually horrible twisted.
Also,
things.
Riven, you fucking pussy. What the hell is going on?
Okay. Do we just skip to that part? Because I was so fucking pissed. They have sex and then he just leaves her and then like
lets them abduct her.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was so mad. I can't even describe the rage I felt in my whole body. Like, he wasn't like my favorite male MC ever, but I was still like kind of intrigued by the romance. I was interested to see where it went. And then that happened, and I was just like, fuck.
I know. I was like, Killian's reveal didn't even bother me that much because of what it implied for Riven.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'll forgive Killian because I'm super pissed at Riven.
Yeah, because like Killian never promised anything of her and didn't like use and abuse her. No, you couldn't keep your dick in your pants, and you knew that she was going to get abducted the next day.
That's what Riven hit it and quit it. And we do not support men who have sex with you under misleading terms. And we also don't support men in general who just kind of lie to your face.
If you want incentive to pick up the second book faster, Casey, that's not even the biggest reveal that man was keeping secret.
Stop it. Stop.
No. Yup.
That's not even the biggest secret this man was keeping. And I will give her credit where credit is due. She's a little slower to trust than in the Serpent in the Wings of Night series. Yes. That the second book goes a lot better than in that case.
Thank God, because I cannot be let down like that again.
But yeah, that's not even the biggest reveal.
No.
It's just it's a little like...
It's a side reveal.
Yeah, it's a pretty deal.
I was ready to kill him. I really was.
Well, you should keep picking, because he was keeping way more from her.
Uh-huh. No, it's all kinds of fucked. But he was always a little bit gray from the beginning. I mean, he's literally the shadow, so I guess he's dark. So the shadow is like the whole mission that Kira's given. She has to kill the shadow and give the head to the mortal king. So their first interaction, as Casey has mentioned, he kisses her.
It's not their first one, but...
Well, kind of was their first one.
The first one we read about.
Yeah, but like still. Just, she's drunk, they're fighting, and then he kisses her. And she kind of punches him or stabs him.
And sparks flew.
I was like, oh, geez.
Anyway, was anyone else in their head chanting... Faded mate. Faded.
Yes.
Faded. Oh, 100%.
Like, ooh, the bond. The bond.
Not actually revealed in this book or necessarily in the next. They don't really address. I don't know. Anyway, they don't talk about that much in this book. But fingers crossed for faded mates.
I think that's where it's going.
That's the vibe I'm getting from the second book, too, but I'm still unclear.
The fact that he kissed her is still so crazy that I'm like, the only reason you could explain this to me in a way that makes sense is that they're mates and he just could not resist.
Yeah, I could not resist as she put knife to my throat.
she was like, what are we doing? Oh, I like it. Okay.
Yeah, then she's confused because she's like, am I drunk?
Yeah, yes, and you're like, yes, you are.
But so what did y'all think of Dark Fae Riven?
I mean, he's everything we keep asking for. The man of shadows, tall, brooding, dark hair.
Purple eyes.
TikTok girls really have something about long hair you can like fist in your hands. You know, I'm like, okay. It's in every description, okay? Like, yeah. It's like, and I reached in his hair and I'm like, okay. I'm not personally super attracted to long hair, so.
Oh my god, you're so.
I'm sorry.
I really liked Riven up until the reveal because I could tell he was a complicated guy, which I liked. I liked that he wasn't fully good, and there was kind of these like dirty, sharp edged bits to him. I was like, okay, yes. And I also liked that I could tell they were going for more of a slow burn. Like, I could tell that, like, everything wasn't going to be sorted out by the first book. Did I expect the full betrayal that he gave? No. Am I ready to forgive? Also, no. So, again, you guys have not set me up for high expectations for book two. I mean, high expectations for a good book, but not for Riven.
So I feel like normally when we talk about all the things that like we're missing this piece of information and this piece of information, most books would be like, therefore, this book is not good. But this one has me like still intrigued. So she did a good job of like placing what needed to be placed. And if we're talking about pleasing the book talkers, the thing she placed here that redeemed Riven originally is the found family with Nikolai and Sira. And I loved their little troop of people, and they're the reason why I think you end up falling in love with Riven a little bit.
You see his softer side, which you really need to see, but it doesn't make sense for him to show that to Kira yet, so you get to see it in a believable way.
And you get to see it by Nikolai teasing him, and I love it.
Yeah, I love Nikolai. He's great.
Yes, the best.
Yeah.
Little sassy.
He also betrayed her, though.
I know. I'm mad at him.
We'll never not be mad at Nikolai either. It almost hurts worse. It doesn't hurt worse for friends, but it also hurts a lot because it's like, you, what we had was pure.
It kind of, yeah, it almost did hurt worse when they were standing behind Killian. I was like, oh, the whole gang betrayed her. That sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you think about it this way, and this is goes into our next question. She literally took the brunt force of like a bomb to save Nikolai and like was basically always on their side trying to help them, gave them no reason to mistrust
her. It wasn't for Nikolai, but like for that, because he was already gone.
Oh, wait, no. Who was it for then?
Just to make the bombs go off.
Oh, just to make the bombs go off. Sorry. I thought she was saving someone. But like, for some
still,
reason.
She sacrificed herself for the entire halfling population.
Yeah.
I would say that's trust vibes there.
And she even was trying to save the halflings that were defending the dam. And like she was always on the side of the halflings, and she was in charge of the Rose Road. She was getting people out and trafficking them back to places she knew they would be safe whenever she could. And so like they never had a reason not to trust her. And then they pull this shit at the end. Like, she has literally almost given her life to your cause. Like, bitch, you saw her wounds. You saw her scars. What the fuck?
Also, that Colin dude, screw him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I hate that dude and how he casts doubt on her and how he's just a POS.
Also, all the shit she took for working for the king was so unjustified. I understand why it was in the book, but every time it happened, I was so pissed off. I was like, think for one second. These people have been abducted as children and forced to do this for survival. None of them love the king. I was like, what's wrong with you? They're clearly all victims who are trapped.
Self-preservation, guys.
Yeah, it's survival instincts. And they're slaves.
Yeah.
And she's like undermining him piece by piece. And she doesn't have to tell you all about it, okay?
Yeah, and like, because like their whole thing is like, you're getting paid by the king. What is she using that money for? To fund an entire like sanctuary system to get halflings to safety.
And even if she wasn't, just because you're being paid by the king doesn't mean you can leave. She was not allowed to quit. That's not the same thing as being paid.
A halfling.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's the part that they always gloss over. It's like, dude, same blood in our veins.
Yeah.
I don't want to be doing this.
Yeah. No, and she was like telling Colin and that group of like, don't just murder these two girls just because they're fighting for the king. Like, you don't need to do this. Like, this is the dumbest thing. Like, it's just murder. You can't justify it.
Right. Well,
it's just, unless it's fiction.
Yeah.
Fair enough. That's only for never mind. I won't say that.
Okay, so up until the big betrayal, you can kind of see Kira like gaining the trust of the hashtag the gang. What did you think about her slow sort of redemption in their eyes?
Like I said, found family is always a win for me.
I do. I never get tired of found family.
Yeah, found family is great. And I love her and Sarah's bond.
I do too.
Is it that's Sarah? Another thing.
Sarah,
I was saying Sarah, but
I kind of like Sarah spelled that way though. Oh well.
Yeah, coming in 2030, Caitlin's got a kid named Sarah spelled with a Y.
A Y and two R's.
Yeah,
I spell my name right, might as well pass it on to my kids,
right? But yeah, I really like Sarah or Sarah. Now I'm all stuck on Sarah. I thought she was one of the biggest redeeming points in the book, actually, because I thought she brought a lot of needed context. I also loved that we had like an ancient character who was sort of like aware of the history and like was part of everything and was able to kind of be a mentor. I think that we actually don't get that dynamic in a lot of fantasy books, especially with like a female friendship. And I thought that was really cool.
And when she understood Kira, when she made Riven take the Shade's life, that's when they like that respect switches. And that was a really powerful little scene for them to like kind of come to terms with. They're both warriors who have had to do hard things. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of sweet how that connected them, even though it was really sad.
Yeah. And I just thought of this, and I think this is so interesting if this is the case, or maybe just connecting too many puzzle pieces. Because she's this ancient being and she lived through the previous wars and the previous history, she, and in Native culture, oral narration and oral tradition is super important. She is the storytelling elder of this story. She is the one who passes down the history, because history books for the world, Elvarath, don't exist because they're fake history. It's not the real history. So it's this, it's the true history coming from her through like this oral narration, oral storytelling of like, here's my experience in these wars. And I don't know if I'm
one, she's older than Riven.
Yeah.
And has more experience than the one I feel like you would typically look to, because he's the fey guy, but she's been alive longer. I don't know. It gives her some, definitely like some pull in the story that you respect her and her opinions quite a bit.
Yeah. And that brings us to our other side character, Nikolai.
Love him.
Sweet baby boy.
He betrayed her.
Yeah, I'm so mad at him. I'm the most mad at him, because I felt like Sira purposefully, even after her and Kira reached an understanding, like purposefully kept sort of an arm's length. And so I felt like she kind of did what she could to like not get overly invested. Nikolai, I was like, how dare you? How dare you?
Yeah. Sarah, whatever. She has been through so much trauma. She doesn't trust people very easily. So it's totally understandable for her to do what she did. But Nikolai, that's just deceptive, because he was acting like best friends with her.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I like how complicated he is, ends up being, because he's kind of this comical flirt, but also like has lived a very long life and knows all this stuff, and is also an engineer, and he's just like got all these little facets to him that makes him interesting. And I think that's why, as a reader, you kind of gravitate towards him.
I agree with that.
Okay, so our final question, and it kind of, it's not the main part of the cliffhanger, but it's hinted throughout the book, Kira's actual ancestry. Question mark, because everyone's kind of like, huh, you're a little too fast and a little too strong and a little too much to be just a halfling.
The second Farron was like, I haven't seen eyes like yours in so long, I was like, she's friggin' fairy of some sort.
Yeah. So what did you think about like this kind of question mark over her ancestry? Do you think she's truly a halfling of half mortal, half elf? Do you think she's something else? Are you looking forward to reading more about her ancestry?
I mean, I'm intrigued.
Yeah, I thought it was this part, the specific information, was a great cliffhanger. Some of the other info I've already said I wish could have been put in the first book a little more. This was something that I was willing to wait on, and I think it's intriguing enough that I really want to know the answer. But I felt like it could be pushed to the second book, so I'm excited to like find out more about it.
I'm glad the author found a unique way to spin the, you know, you got ACOTAR where they turn fey, and like people can be turned fey, and then you've got another series. Another series we've read where the main character is secretly fey and hides it from everyone, and it's, this one is unique because you still are curious, like, is she fey, is she not? And if, you know, if she ends up giving the people what they tend to want on Book Talk, she probably is. But it's another way to write the, like, mystery without it being repetitive. Like, it was a new way for a reveal to happen for the main character, if you're following all the, like, normal fantasy genre tropes we've had lately. I don't know if that made sense. That was a lot of words.
No, it made sense.
No, I agree. That made sense.
Yeah, I definitely was like, them light fae looking a little sus over there.
I like the mystery of, like, she looks like she's light fae, but there hasn't been a light fae to, like, pass on genes in, what is it, like, hundreds of years? And I was like,
or something.
Yeah, a long time. And I was like, a plot is amiss.
Something's afoot. Like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it definitely leaves a huge question mark. So I guess we'll just have to read on, or if you're like me and Caitlin, already have read on.
Will I stay up till 2 a.m. tonight finishing this book? TBD.
Wow. Okay. Well, after you're finished staying up till 2 a.m. reading this book, what would you recommend to other people to read?
I'm actually prepared for this. Okay.
Oh.
I'm not going to recommend one of the ones we've go back and listen to our episodes. We've done a bunch of books like this. Okay. We've said that. One I mentioned earlier, that's like a book talk driven book. It's called A Dawn of Onyx by Kate Golden. It was a cute little fantasy book, and I will probably pick up the second one because I was intrigued enough by the main character who maybe has some ambiguous power she's not sure of, and the dark, sexy female who comes into her life, come barreling in. So I was like, okay, you know, sign me up. Clearly, I like this story. So if you like this story and you need another one, there's another one.
Yeah, I know this is basic. I feel like I recommend this series all the time, especially for a series I haven't read very recently. Graceling. It is Graceling. And Catherine just reminded me about its existence again. I think Graceling is a really dark book that also contends with a lot of real life biases, from like racism to misogyny. And so I think if you like those kind of dark themes, you like female, strong female main characters that are sort of dealing with them and leading resistance, and the world is magical, I think it definitely serves that.
I'm going to be super basic because I didn't prepare for this at all, and would recommend Selena Sardothian from Throne of Glass and that series, because it is very similar. The assassin that didn't really want to be an assassin is just kind of surviving. There's also, she does deal with some alcoholism as well. So very, very many similarities.
Yeah, her one binge drinking episode where she can't get off the roof.
We just want to emphasize that these are just our opinions and they don't have to be yours. And we want you to disagree, and we want you to disagree with us. So make sure that you're reaching out to us with your opinions, with your book recommendations based off of our books we've read. We look forward to seeing more viewer recommended books, because it's always fun to read those.
Those book talk influenced romances, like those hockey things, let us know. Do not recommend the ice planet shit. Don't do that. But if you have a book talk book that's actually worth reading, hit us up.
Yeah, so go see our website. You can find more of our recommendations there. You can also submit recommendations there. Almost everywhere is at Busy Girls Pod, Instagram, everything. So come join in the conversation, and please rate and review this podcast 5 stars.
Wherever you listen. And with that, I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.